And it's 12 o'clock.
Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So tonight is step four, part two, if you will, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Last week, we talked about resentments. You know, a few of us get those. And so tonight, tonight is the money, though. We're going to talk about fear and sex. And so we're going to start off, Richard and Vernon from the Craddock Group have graciously agreed to come and share with us tonight. So I'll start off on page 67. Right at the bottom of the page, notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Richard?
I'm Richard, an alcoholic.
Hey, Richard.
The solution for me to be happy and have a reasonable life where I can be of service to others, mainly those that I care about, is inventory and prayer. And that's what we're talking about is inventory. Apparently you already spoke about resentments. When I got to the fear portion of that, I misread it. I thought fear meant to be scared of, and that's not what it means. Fear to me is and worry are kind of the same thing. And in working with a sponsor and working these steps, I realized what this meant. And I understand that the format of this meeting is to give you an experience that I had, and I'll give you an experience, quick experience. My daughter, when she was very young, had brain cancer. She was 13 years old. She had a host of physicians that were very, very smart, much smarter than I was. But I was scared to death. I was fearful that she was going to die. And I was very angry. And there's a lot of bad things were going on in my head. And I made a lot, and I was drinking. That's when I was drinking. And I made a lot of mistakes. I forced a lot of things down these physicians through threat that they did that, in retrospect, may have injured my daughter, may have caused her harm. May not have, I don't know. But she survived it, and eventually I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and got a home group, got a sponsor, started working these steps. She had a recurrence of her cancer. This time, however, I had an inventory. I had something that I could work with. I knew that I'm scared to death. My daughter has cancer. The difference was, instead of me telling you that so you would feel sorry for me and perceiving it as I'm going to lose something that I want, or I'm going to be perceived as a punk because I can't cure her, instead I was able to look at it as, wait a minute, what's my fear? My fear needs to be for her benefit, not mine. So that's the solution to alcoholism. That's what we're talking about with these fears, is I acknowledge the fact that I am fearful of Lisa has cancer. And this is what it affects in me. And I was able to come up with the fact that my job is to be reassuring to her, to be there for her through whatever it takes. And the end result of that is, in believing that there's a power greater than myself that can help me with all my problems, and you don't even need to believe this, is that the payoff for me was I can see through it. She's had cancer 3 times since then. And now when I understand, she not to sound dramatic, but she may die from that. That cancer may kill her. It may not. But today, my job is to be of service to her, not to be of service to me. And that's what we're talking about with fear. I can identify something that I'm fearful of, understand what it is that it's affecting in me that's making me crazy and unable to be of service to the person that I need to be of service to. So that's what that means to me, if that makes any sense. Thank you.
Thank you. Vernon?
My name is Vernon Fish, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Vernon. Hey, Vernon.
I remember when I got to this part of the inventory process, I told my sponsor I didn't have to do this because I'm not afraid of nothing. One day I was worried about something I think had to do with my daughter, and I was riding. I used to ride and drink, but I was just riding. And I had to ask Bill Caesar with me. So I turned in the back to worry. It says, see fear. Maybe that's what they're talking about. Alcoholism, I believe that alcoholism is a disease of perception. It's not how it is. It's how it looks to me. I was taught that resentment is the number one offender because it has my head running. My head's full. Going 900 miles an hour. And worry does the same thing. It's running around, a squirrel cage gets to run around and run around and around. So anytime I read any of the literature and it says fear, I believe Bill's talking about worry. Works for me. Thank you.
Thanks, Vernon. We're going to continue on page 68, in the middle of the page. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we're now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us, and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Richard?
Richard Nethall.
Hey, Richard.
The book speaks about itself. It says that if I do these things, these steps, I will have some degree of a conscious contact with the power that will help me with all my problems, and everything will be all right in spite of appearances. I worked in an emergency room for many, many years. Seen a lot of dead people, seen a lot of terrible things. And occasionally I would see, I don't mean to burden anybody, but you know, a dead child. And the parents would be with this child, and it would confuse me, because sometimes the parents, they weren't okay, but they were okay, and I couldn't figure it out. You know, they seemed to grieve, they were upset, but they seemed accepting in some way. You know, they weren't flailing on the floor, they weren't doing whatever. You know, it was something that I didn't understand. My brain wouldn't process it. But in talking to these people, they generally tended to be people of faith, people that had some spiritual something. They had whatever they had. And they were sad, and they would rather that this had not happened. But they pulled together, and you could see that they were something. And that confused me forever. And then I like many people in Alcoholics Anonymous, have had on occasion experiences to be upset, to be grieving or angry or whatever. And what the book says about itself is accurate. Erratic, occasionally, things happen. And you're upset. And you whine, I whine, I'm pitching and moaning and blah, 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 blah. And invariably, somebody, usually the sponsor, will get you in the alleyway, put his index finger in your chest and say, just do it. And that's what this is. We can talk about this until the cows come home. But I have to, you can do whatever you want to do, but I have to believe that this works. And I do, because I've experienced it. It's happened for me. You know, where that experience, not that exact experience, that those people of faith, of some spiritual something, that through incredible adversity were okay in spite of appearances, that has happened to me. And there's a debt to that. And the debt is that I get in front of a group of people and say that and mean it. It's up to you to believe it or not. Doesn't really matter to me one way or the other. But I believe it. And hopefully someday, and that's been my experience, somebody somewhere along the line, a few years down the road, will come to me and say, you know, that happened to me. I actually made a conscious decision to do what I say I'm doing. And everything is okay in spite of appearances. Damn, isn't it something? So I don't know if that has anything to do with what was read, but that's what I had to say.
Thank you. Vernon?
It also says in the big book that God is everything or God is nothing. What is my choice to be? If God is nothing, we can all go down to the nearest bar. I'll buy the first round. If God is everything, then if fear is worry, if God is everything, then there's nothing to worry about. It's simple. My problem arises when I decide this is good or this is bad, or this is right or this is wrong. That's my perception. It gets me in a lot of trouble. It always has. But there's no good and bad, and there's no right or wrong. It is what it is. If God's in charge, then it is what it is. Where do I get off with the ego to question God and tell him he's doing it wrong? I spent a long time doing it. He didn't want to hear it. Thank you.
Hey, Brian.
Now about sex.
All right.
It's worth the price of admission you paid tonight. We're going to continue on page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there. But above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes perhaps.
One set of voices cry that sex is the lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we don't have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare. The other would have us all on a straight peppered diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiters of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? Richard?
I'm Richard, an alcoholic. Ever since I can remember, I've had a difficulty with determining the difference between right and wrong. It's just not something that's automatic for me, but I have a lot of opinions. We tend to shy away from this, but it's part of the inventory. And sex just doesn't mean what I did right or what I did wrong, and it's not just me. It goes on forever in terms of my perception. Family members, I have children, and on and on. So the sex is something that is in my world somewhere all the time. Somebody can piss me off somewhere along the line. So it for me, it's all in doing an inventory on sex relations. It's not so specific as to just, you know, something like I had an affair or this, that, and the other. Those are the obvious. I worked in an emergency room for many years. There's primarily females that work in hospitals. This could be good or bad, depending on your perception at the moment.
I see where you're going with this.
So my experience, one experience I had was that I worked with a nurse that was a very, very good nurse. And we worked good together. And there was nothing, in my perception, wrong going on, but my wife of many years disagreed that her calling me was inappropriate, and so on and so forth. Where this inventory comes into play is, here's how I think about that. How dare you, accuse me of doing this, that, and the other. And then about 8,000 other things happen in my head, and next thing you know, I'm crazy. Right? The inventory is in with that sex relation is right, wrong, or indifferent. It doesn't matter. I need to put it on paper. And how does this affect me? What is my part? My part, what, right, wrong, or indifferent, it doesn't matter. My part is that her calling me upsets my wife. My wife, an alcoholic, it says in the literature, has a hell of a time forming a relationship with anybody. That's way true. So I'm trying to form this relationship with this woman who's a hillbilly and dangerous as hell. You know? and trying to explain to her that this is just a good buddy. But in doing the inventory, I realize it doesn't matter. I don't have to be right. It is upsetting to her for whatever reason. So if I'm going to be of service to my wife, then the move is to say to this lady, I don't have to give a dissertation either. It's just, can you not call my house? Thank you. And I'm done. That's what this program does. That's what we're talking about. I don't know the difference between right and wrong. I don't know. I want to win, you know? But if I want to have a relationship with another human being for a sustained period of time without one of us getting killed, then I need to do this inventory that tells me it's easier to just tell this girl, quit calling me. So that's an experience. That's what we do, you know? That's what we do, is that's my experience. We don't have to grade it. It's just using an inventory. That's what I did. And then so she's not pissed off for the day. And Vernon has a much better.
Vernon?
I love hearing him.
I was born in 1945. 1960, I had my first drunk, and it was the 60s. And it was sex, drugs, rock and roll. It was most of that decade, I really don't remember. So I know we're not talking about this part, but it reminds me of when I did a fifth step down on the boat, and we went through these things. Because the inventory is just three lists. It's resentments, it's fears, it's sex relations. It's not the great American novel or none of that crap. So anyway, I'm telling Bill who I intend to make amends to. I have a list. And Bill tells me, you do not need to call these women and tell them you're a jerk. They already know that. I just want somebody to pat me on the head because I was sober and maybe call and come over and visit, but... Through the inventory process, first of all, I was a piss poor parent. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that or not, but I did. But I'm a good grandfather. And I understand now the bounds of God and society, and I can transfer that to my grandchildren. I have a 13-year-old granddaughter, which is interesting. And try to show her how to have a sane way of dealing with sex. Try to be honest, tell her what I did, even though sometimes it's very embarrassing, and what happened. We don't only tell what we did right and the outcome, and everybody pats us on the head. If we're going to be honest in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I'm talking, especially another alcoholic, I have to tell them the truth. I did this, it turned to shit, and don't do that. Or do whatever you want to do. Doesn't matter to me, but I'm telling you what happened, how it went. And I got a 7-year-old grandson and a 5-year-old granddaughter. Maybe I will acquire a tad bit more sobriety when they get into their teens, if I'm still alive, and be able to help them with questions they have they just can't go to their mom with. They want to know, but they can't go to their mom. But they can come to Grandpa. My grandson loves me. He rushes up to me every time I see him and says, Grandpa, do you have money?
That's all. All right. We're going to continue on page 69. We reviewed our conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and to help us live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. Richard?
Richard, alcoholic.
Yeah, Richard.
In terms of my own behavior, when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous and did an initial sat down and did an initial four-step inventory, did a fifth step with a sponsor, it's pretty straightforward. You know, it wasn't really rocket science. There was things that happened, and we have a step to take care of that. You know that, and it doesn't just encompass, when we talk about sex, fears, resentments, we're always still talking about the same thing, inventory and prayer, inventory and prayer. I can't get hung up on just one part of it. It's all inventory and prayer. My father was an alcoholic, and he was the meanest, most malicious son of a bitch that ever walked the face of the earth. And he discovered Alcoholics Anonymous when I was in Appalachia, and showed up with a turkey one Thanksgiving. I had acquired a wife and a daughter, and he was a different man. And he stayed that way until the day he died. Had a terminal disease, knew he was going to die. We had a ball the last 3 months he was alive. But I never did understand what the change was. He had integrity. I could go to him, and he would say, just like what we're talking about tonight, this is what it was like. This is what I did, and this is what the outcome was. And do whatever the hell you want to do. And he did those things until the day he died. And my grandchildren, or my children rather, make a lot of decisions based on that way of life that their grandfather showed them. Because I was an asshole then. And I'm like Vernon. I have a passel of grandchildren. And they come to me. I got an ex-son-in-law that comes to me that I love dearly. He's a great guy. I don't like the new one. But anyway, they come to me. And that's what we have to offer through inventory and prayer. That's what we have to offer through this program is that this is my experience. And in terms of the sex portion of the inventory, it that comes up again through my family members. This is where we're of service. It's not just me, you know. If I have daughters, sons, whatevers that are having some problem with sex relations, then I have something to offer, you know. Without I have a family member that did some things that I consider very, very wrong. But through inventory, I was able to put that on hold. And where can I be of maximum service to her? You know, even though I perceive her behavior as being horrendous, where can I be of maximum service to her? I.e., doing that, I'm of maximum service to my grandchildren. The easy answer for me, and I don't mean this to seem dramatic, but it's so important to some people out there. Maybe none of you are here tonight, maybe all of you. But it's easy. It is so easy to have a problem with a family member, a daughter or something, somebody that's injured them, and hunt the son of a bitch down and shoot him in the head. And to be able to, and that's who I am. That's to me, that is an entirely appropriate action. And I don't mean it to seem dramatic. What I mean it to be is, through this inventory and prayer, I'm able to not understand it. I still think it's entirely appropriate to whack somebody that's hurt your kid. But I'm able to stop that and be of service to that family member, those grandchildren, and so on and so forth. That's a miracle. That's a miracle. So that's what we're talking about. It's all, this whole thing is just inventory and prayer. The rest of it, whether I want to whack somebody or I got a hole in my muffler, it doesn't matter. It's all just details. That's all it is. So I tend to get off topic.
No, you're fine, Ben.
You can call him Vernon. He does, too.
Vernon?
Once again, I believe that alcoholism is a disease of perception. When I drank, the world looked different. Nothing changed, but I liked it. It was a lot better world. I decided to stay there as much as I could. I guess I'll start with the beginning. I got in a little trouble. I shot a couple folks. And I was sentenced to the penitentiary. And there were some things that went on with the trial that weren't quite right. Anyway, I was out on appeal for a long period of time. And finally got a new trial. And I was talking to my lawyer, and he says, "You're going to jail. You make too much money. You've got a terrible record with everything. You know, just on general principles, they're gonna lock your ass up." He says, "You have no responsibility." Oh, I said, "What if I was married?" He knows where this is going. He said, "That might help." So I called a girl that night, and the next morning we went and got married. I took that girl home. She was a good person. Unfortunately, she got hung up with me, but I took her home and told her, "Okay, let's get some things straight. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine. You do what I tell you, and I'll do what I want. Control is an illusion that most alcoholics live with." She put up with that for 4 years. She left, and I'm ready to go dancing because she needs somebody to help her spend her money. We stayed married for 8 years. She fought back.
And shot back.
And shot back, yeah. She stepped out on the porch one day and tried to blow my ass away, shot holes all in my brand new pickup truck. Pissed me off, but I didn't go back. We were married for 8 years, and I got married again. And we were married for 16 years. And during that divorce, I couldn't get things the way I wanted. And I was doing things I shouldn't have done, and it was hard to come to AA meetings behaving that way and keep lying, so I could come to AA meetings. Lost 55 pounds, got drunk, and was getting ready to shoot myself. And a couple guys, one of my ex-SEAL, come and scoop me up and took me to Ivor. I don't know if you've ever been to Ivor, but you can't get out of Ivor. You're stuck in Ivor. And they drive me out, and I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was still upset with that woman. All my sex relations has been upsetting. They just won't behave. And so my sponsor told me, he says, Vernon, you have to pray for Risa. And I said, I'm not praying for Risa. He said, well, all you need to do is ask for God's will in her life. I'm not asking God's will in her life. I wanted her to get hit by a truck. And he said, maybe God wants her to get hit by a truck. But it is, it's hilarious, but I started praying for God's will in Risa's life. And it wasn't too long after that that I called her over and told her I owe you a lot of money. I didn't get her drunk, but I knew she was drunk. She signed the house over to me, and I sold it and didn't give her a nickel because she was wrong and I was right. Anyway, oh, that seems so strange now, but I had to call over the house and I'm paying her back. I got 9 more payments, I think. I've been paying her for several years. Do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And this was never my plan. It never dawned on me. I'll tell you something that's not got a lot to do with what we're talking about, but it comes to mind. Is Father Dowling was a Jesuit priest. He had a lot to do with Alcoholics Anonymous in the early years. And I don't know what a Jesuit priest is, but sounds like a very holy dude. And he said that if I should ever find myself in heaven, it will be from backing out of hell. Well, that's the way I have learned the things that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. Is all we have here is a spiritual awakening. If you're new, I'm sorry. They don't tell you that because they think you'll leave, but that's all we got. And having had a spiritual awakening, that is as a result of these steps. Anybody who's done these or read them, they're mechanical. You do things. You write, a lot of writing. And you go do fifth steps on the boat, and you do stuff. And this is a mechanical way for a spiritual award. We don't just go to the Holy Roller Church and whatever. I'm not putting those people down, but we have to do stuff. It's like gears. They fit into one another, and when we get there, there's a spiritual awakening. Step 11 in that book says, having just made conscious contact with God. That's not going to happen in step 3. It happens when I get all of these things done. When I've done them to the best of my ability, it just happens. God removes the obsession for alcohol somewhere along the road. It's not that I quit. I never had a plan on quitting. I like being stoned and getting in trouble. But God takes it away. It's just gone. So that's the spiritual aspect of this thing that we don't tell you. There was a guy, I can't remember his name, I was trying to remember his name, but whenever he spoke, it's been a long time ago, he's dead. Whenever he spoke, we wouldn't go because he was going to talk about God. and he would always say, that's okay. If God chases you out, booze will chase your ass back. Thank you.
Thanks, Vernon. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsels with other persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. Richard?
I'm Richard Nagalik.
Richard.
Vernon and I have a similar first marriage story. Actually, I've only had one marriage. I went to Appalachia when I was about 16 because I was in a world of shit, and I'm not going to explain all the details. But I met a hillbilly up there, and I guess about a week and a half later, we were ready to get married. And the day before we got married, I had to ask somebody what the hell her name was because I couldn't remember what her name was. And that's just the truth. And we've been married for 37 years, 38 years, something like that. We've been married a long time. And I remember telling her when we first got married, same thing, Vernon, telling her, I said, Judy, you gotta understand something. I said, just because we're getting married, because I got married very, very young, I got married for the same reason Vernon did. I figured if I got married, I asked her, I did an interrogation. I said, do you drink? Nope, didn't drink. Didn't do drugs, and none of that stuff. She lived back in a holler. First time she ever come out of that holler, she was 13 years old. She listened to every word I said. If that woman said five words in an entire day, that was a big deal. And she did exactly as she was told, I mean, for years. And it was perfect. And then she's lived around here long enough now that she's, y'all have rubbed off on her. But she, I asked her, I guess it was after we got married. I don't know when the hell it was, but I said, look, now, you understand that there's a lot of women out there. So, might need to spread the wealth here a little bit. And to me, that made perfect sense. It really did. It made perfect sense. And she didn't agree, but she didn't agree vehemently. She was quiet about it. But I just thought about that. But anyway, the rest of the story is it just seems like for me that in that this part of this inventory, it comes more down to more of hell, I've had the same wife for 37 years, and you know what I mean? It just hadn't been a big problem. But I got a lot of kids, and this type of situation has been a problem for them that has involved violent occasions. Not with my kids, with the ones that they got hooked up with. And this inventory, it's just the same thing. What happened to me happened with what Vernon was talking about. My daughter, one of my daughters was married. I got to figure out how to say this without going to the penitentiary. She was married, and he did some bad things. And I decided to make that stop. And I did. And it involved some other people that needed to be stopped. And I did. But they survived. And I chased this boy to a house one day looking for him. And he wouldn't come out, so I run an 81 Chevrolet through his front of the house. And the thing that helped me was I knew the cops pretty good, and made it seem like he was crazier than I was, got him all tuned up by calling him very nasty names real low, and I got out of it, and did a lot of other things. But eventually I come to my sponsor because it was making me crazy. And because I was looking like a punk. And the things he had done, you know, to my daughter, and then, you know, got hooked up with some stripper somewhere and this, that, and it was making me pretty crazy. And the long and short of it is, my sponsor said is two things. One is, what would you do if that old boy come through that door right there and said, you know, I'm an alcoholic and I need a little help? And that the spiritual awakening that we talk about, that pretty much happened that day. And this isn't a lie, this is the truth, is it clicked. You know, I'd kill that boy in a minute. And I knew that if he did that, I would, that's what I told him. I said, well, I would introduce him to somebody to help him. Oh, holy shit, did I just say that? You know? But that was a red letter date. That's when I realized that this works. This is how I don't kill people and get crazy, you know? And so that happened. And then what he also told me, he said, why don't you just get down on your knees and pray to this asshole because he's your higher power. And all of a sudden I realized, I believe he is. So I saw him a couple years later in Circuit City. And had my hillbilly wife with me, who understands that it is appropriate for a daughter's daddy to kill somebody that's hurt. See, you don't have to be an alcoholic to think this way. You can be from a holler and think this way. And I saw him. He was right there. And he looked right at me. And he knew that generally I had the capability to do that. And so he looked somewhat fearful. But I was spiritual right that minute. And I didn't say anything to him. But I didn't kill him. And I think it might have aggravated my wife a little bit. But I didn't kill him. And I hadn't seen him since. But that's the deal. That's inventory and prayer. I just need to get by today. If I'm in the penitentiary for killing this asshole, then I got 7 grandchildren and I'm going to see the grandfather. It's that simple. It's that simple. When my daughter that has cancer needs her daddy, I'm in the penitentiary. You know? So selfishness and self-centeredness, located on page 62 of that book, that's what defines me. If I don't do an inventory and calm this down and woe back who I am, then I'm going to make a very, very big mistake. So far, I'm beginning to experience what my daddy experienced, the ability to get through the day and be of service to somebody else. And I like it. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. Mm-hmm. Vernon?
It says selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of our problem, not was. I've listened to a lot of this stuff. And I dare say most of the people in this room have been in a sexual relationship with a needy individual, somebody who cared about you, or somebody who cared about me. And I have used that to get my way to... I was under the impression that wives were good for taking care of details. I handle the money, you do all the irritating shit. And that's no way to treat people. But I was completely unaware of that. I had to do an inventory and sit there and do a fifth step before I could see any of me. And I find that we're not talking about a fifth step, but I don't know what I would do without that. I've gone, when I did my first inventory, I was 47 years old. So I get these pages written down, and what makes me think that I have told the truth when I've been lying for 47 years? I have to have another human being that can see what's really going on and see the way I treated these women and why. Anybody that cared for me was in for a bad time, all of them. It wasn't just women I dated or married. I'm talking about my sister, my mother. All the females in my life suffered by knowing me. And that's a hard thing to look at. I always thought they were pretty lucky, but they didn't. But that's where the what we're talking about is, it seems to me that step 4 through 7 teach me what to pray for. Can't see any other reason for having them. I do an inventory, and I believe I found out what character defects caused me to behave the way I behaved. But I have to go do a fifth step and see if that's what really happened. And I have to be willing to have God remove these things, and then I know what to pray for. If I don't do those, I'm still praying to Santa Claus. I'm still asking God to do, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes-Benz? I'm still asking God to do things for me. It came as a shock to realize that my job is to get up in the morning and ask God what I can do for him. That's the plan. It's much better than what he can do for me, because he just pissed me off. He wouldn't buy me nothing. That's it.
All right. So to sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge, when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you've made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. Richard?
Richard, an alcoholic. If you hang around long enough, there's people that will come up to you and ask you to sponsor. And being a sponsor is nothing more than just giving them what you were given. And I can't see myself. The book talks about it. The alcoholic has a complete, utter inability to perceive himself as he really is. I can't perceive myself. I have no friggin' clue. But there was a guy that I knew that when it came to sex relations, that was a big problem. And knowing what to do is useless as tits on a poor hog. If you don't do it, then it's useless. And if you hang around long enough, you'll see a lot of terrible things in Alcoholics Anonymous that end up being okay, because you learn what not to do. And this guy couldn't see his part in the sex relations portion of his inventory. He was unwilling to do it. And they weren't acting right. And he became very despondent one day and went in his backyard and shot himself in the head. I mean, that's pretty nuts and bolts, wouldn't you think? Here it is. Since late 1930s, this is what people like us have done, and it's worked for quite a few people. And then there's those people out there that make a decision that I can't do this part, and then they shoot themselves in the head. And that's pretty much all I need to know. I'd rather not shoot myself in the head. I'm having a pretty good little ride right here. So that's useful information. It has been my experience that to do a half-ass inventory of resentments and fears and sex relations is you're wasting your time. If you do a thorough inventory, and then there's another step later on to take care of the daily maintenance, then you have an opportunity to have a good day that day. Wouldn't it be nice to have a good day today? Because if I'm pissed off and angry and things aren't working right and they're not acting right and I get hit by a bus, that sucks. When I get hit by a bus, I want to be happy. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. Vernon?
I believe that the spiritual awakening that is mentioned in step 12 is a feeling that everything is in perfect order, regardless of appearance, regardless of my perception. That is a very comfortable place to be. I'm no longer at war with the planet. I'm no longer at war with anyone. It's just, it's comfortable. It's the ease and comfort that Dr. Silkworth talks about. And that doesn't happen all the time. Occasionally I decide that they're not behaving and I need to punish them. And it always ends up badly. The book says I'm beating myself over the head with the bat I tend to use, or club, whatever I tend to use on them. But if you haven't had that feeling, you're really missing something. No matter what's going on, no matter what's happening around, no matter how crazy the rest of the world is behaving, everything's in perfect order regardless of appearance. The flip side of that is when your girlfriend comes home with a lot of groceries and pisses you off, and you start throwing groceries out. And when she leaves, you've got $300 worth of groceries on the floor, milk mixed in with soap suds and flour, and you're up to 5 o'clock the next morning cleaning the apartment thinking, maybe I shouldn't have done that. So, I don't feel that way all the time. When I do, I try to pay attention and really enjoy it. It's not going to last. Not because God doesn't want it to last, because Vernon gets a case of ass and starts throwing stuff. Oh, well. I do the best I can. And a lot of people I've sponsored have got some use out of the fact that two things, if I have time. One is, when you're reading, pay attention to the little words. It said God could relieve of sanity. Don't say would. It says a power greater than ourselves. Don't say the power. It says self-centered is the root of our problem, not was. It's try to carry the message and try to practice the principles. You have to pay attention to the little words. We're so bright, we read right through them and put our own definition on whatever's going on. And one more thing before I stop, and these are things that have helped me. I was reading St. Francis' Prayer in the 12 and 12. And at the end of that, he says, reread this like one line at a time and ask, what the hell has this got to do with me? So I took the big book and sat down, and I would read a paragraph or a page, a thought, and close the book and say, what the hell has this got to do with me? I know what it's got to do with you. Read the whole first 164 pages like that. Changed my life. Gave me a whole different perspective. And I'd like to tell Graham that none of us are as sober as we think we are. Including me. And Graham. And Richard. And all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. That was wonderful. I'm going to pass the seven tradition basket. Seven tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seven tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences
that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements for the good of AA tonight? I'm an alcoholic. My name is David.
David.
And the Craddock Group has kindly agreed to sponsor a workshop next Saturday on the 24th, the New to Service workshop. It's a basically, you have to say that slowly, new to service. It's not nudist service.
That's after the
yeah, after.
That's in the alley.
The meeting after the meeting.
The workshop after.
So it's going to start at 6:30 p.m. in beautiful downtown Craddock, and it'll take about an hour. And then y'all will have your regular meeting at 8 o'clock, the study group, right? Mm-hmm. Saturday night, 8 o'clock, mm-hmm. Craddock. So it's a good time Saturday night in Craddock next Saturday. You want to do this?
Sure. Our home group is an orange flyer over on the table there. October the 25th, which is a Friday, and October the 26th, which is the day after, so it must be Saturday. In Ghent United Methodist Church, we're putting on a mini conference, and we're getting a speaker called Bob D from Vegas. He's coming in, and he's going to speak on Friday night and all day on Saturday. And there's no charge, it's completely free. It's a potluck lunch on Saturday. The flyers are up there. Come along, enjoy.
Everybody's welcome.
Thank you, Graham.
Any other announcements? Please. Lisa.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
The Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. And just so that we can welcome you by first name, is there anybody in the room tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? Can you just get your first name?
My name's Trey, and I'm an alcoholic.
Trey.
Hey, Trey.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Anybody else? There's literature available on the table over there. If you can fold it, it's free. If you'd like to purchase a book, just see one of the home group members. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. All right. In closing, I'd like to thank Richard and Vernon again for coming and sharing with us tonight. Thank you.
My mother's been sober for 86 years, and nobody's applauded yet.
That's funny, because we usually don't applaud. You guys inspired that. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at...
The Mexican place.
On the corner of 22nd and Colonial.
I'll put it in the navigation.
Plaza del Sol, yeah.
It'll end up in Tijuana.
Yeah.
And is anyone inspired to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Vernon Fish. That's in his DNA.
And I'm just going to sit here and ask, what does this have to do with me?
I'm going to start a little before that.
Yeah.
Because I'm an alcoholic, I do shit different. No, it's not. It's all in 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Look up trudge when you get home. Thank you.
Shall we close with the Lord's Prayer? Jill, will you lead us?
Sure. Who keeps us sober?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, man.
Oh, you did?
You weren't doing preaching.
Yeah,
perfect.
It's nice to meet you.
Thank you.
31 days.
Oh, cool. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I love that.
Great.
I had a really good.